Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden, and joining me tonight as co-host, courtesy of the San Jose office of Berliner Cohen, Josh Borger. By now well-known as a frequent guest in Your Legal Rights, Josh practices commercial and civil litigation in a variety of areas. Occasionally, we have a show that, when the show's over, we notice we've barely scratched the surface, and the volume of calls makes it clear that you want more. Given the demand, we circle back to one such program tonight, when we resume our discussion of cryptocurrency. As Josh would note if he could hear me, last fall, as the fall before that, our broadcasts in each were devoted to the law surrounding cryptocurrency. After looking at such questions as where do I store it? How do I track it? If I lose my computer, can I find it? How do I find what my spouse might have stashed? And if I manage to find it, how do I value it? My guest pointed a picture of a legal landscape that was something reminiscent of the old Wild West. Tonight we revisit that discussion. The past few weeks constituted a tremendously volatile period. So just what has changed? Are these assets a form of money, of property, of securities? As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. While our attorney guests cannot give you specific legal advice, we don't have all of the salient facts of your case, we're happy to pass along the legal principles to help you in your decision-making. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic or any question relating to cryptocurrency. You're not limited to the exact point that we may be in our conversation. We're seemingly having a delay over Zoom, so I apologize for the delay. Bear with us. To help out this regulatory scheme, we have with us, courtesy of Goodwin LLP, Grant Fondo, an experienced federal prosecutor and former assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of California. Grant is the head of the litigation department for Goodwin's California offices, founder and co-chair of its digital currency and blockchain technology practice, and a partner in the firm's security litigation and white-collar defense group, and in its privacy and cybersecurity practice. And from the Palo Alto office of Perkins Coie LLP, business attorney Troy Foster has focused on emerging companies for his entire career. He has particular depth representing technology startups. As well as the investment banks and venture capital firms that support them. Troy provides legal leadership for emerging growth companies on all of their legal, compliance, and related matters. Working with numerous mid to late stage emerging growth companies and pre-IPO candidates. Grant, Troy, Josh, let me welcome all of you to Your Legal Rights. So let me ask for a quick overview. Exactly what is cryptocurrency?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Grant, Troy, can one of you give me an overview of just what is cryptocurrency?
I think we might be a little bit delayed. So Yes. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, you're coming through fine.
Okay, great. So cryptocurrency is...
We still hear you.
Okay. So cryptocurrency is... sorry, I'm getting a bizarre echo.
My guests seem to be having the same echo and seem to have difficulty hearing the question. There's a significant delay.
Okay, let me give this another try. So, cryptocurrency is electronic stored measure of value that can be transferred, and in this context is maintained over a blockchain, where the blockchain is built on sort of a transactional record that is immutable and is sort of lines up in blocks as new transactions occur. Bitcoin is probably the most well-known of the cryptocurrencies.
So we've heard a bit about Bitcoin, about blockchain. Are they the same thing?
So they're not the same thing, but Bitcoin uses blockchain technology, and that is the foundation upon which Bitcoin is built.
Let me jump into a contemporary topic that put cryptocurrency on the air. Just throw it out there for people. Elon Musk made a comment about cryptocurrency on Saturday Night Live, and suddenly it's making currency go wild. Now, it's doubtful the same thing would happen if someone made a comment about the U.S. dollar. What was the comment? Why did it cause such a stir? And why would it matter? And what does that say about cryptocurrency that it could cause such a stir? There's a lot in there.
There is a lot in there. So I think a couple things. So the comments that that Elon made on Saturday Night Live were it was actually in the context of a skit where he was talking about Dogecoin, and the I think it was Michael Che was sort of pressing him for to describe it in detail, and ultimately, the character in the skit that Elon was playing admitted that in the context of the skit that the that it was a I think he called it a like a not a scam but a hustle. That's right. That's the word he used. And the impact of that was that Dogecoin took a pretty big hit. I think a 30% reduction kind of following the show being aired, and it's since recovered. And I think the larger crypto market, was sort of on an upswing. So I don't know that had, much to do with his appearance. But I think the thing that it highlights for me is that, some of these individual cryptocurrencies are highly susceptible to, individuals kind of making comments about them that can cause, big swings in the, in the value. That doesn't happen as much with the more, established cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. But you do see some impact, from public statements. Like I think when Turkey, this was more than a public statement, but when Turkey said it was going to ban, you know, sort of the Bitcoin mining, there was an impact, you know, to the price. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't in 30% range, but it was, you know, something I think north of 5%.
Yeah, if I could jump in too, this is Grant. I think it shows a couple of things. One is the fact that anybody cared and listened shows how much cryptocurrency and digital assets have come over the last couple of years, because I don't know that this would have been picked up two or three years ago. It also does show that it's still a relatively new asset class that can be moved pretty significantly. He made a recent statement about the environmental impacts of Bitcoin. And that, I think, combined with China's statement about disliking Bitcoin a little bit, caused a decrease in the price recently. Now, that was on the back end of a huge, huge uptick. So these adjustments happen, and it may be a combination of events. But I do think it's significant. I think also Elon Musk is viewed as, you know, a technology leader, and I think it's great he's talking about it. I wish he didn't have quite the impact he does, but it's I think it shows that crypto assets are here to stay, and they're continuing to be much more mainstream than they were just a couple of years ago.
Well, so, what does it say? Let me just follow that up. What does it say about the classification of it, that it might be more of in the realm of someone who's speculating on the market versus an actual currency?
Well, I think, listen, currencies are speculative too, right? When Greece had its economic problems, significantly impacted the currency of Greece. We don't see it so much in the U.S. because the U.S. is a very stable currency. But many other countries, it's speculative, essentially, investing in their currencies because they fluctuate so much. And so I think this is just another form of an asset. It's a cryptocurrency that is an asset that does fluctuate. It doesn't fluctuate as much as other forms of cryptocurrency. But it also speaks to, it is a relatively new currency versus the U.S. dollar, which is obviously much, much more stable.
So it looks like some of these currencies, Bitcoin in particular, have dropped quite a bit of late. We talked a little bit about the why, but do you see that as a market that's going to recover? Is there a point where we should be concerned?
I think it will recover. I know, Troy, you look like it. What do you think?
Well, it's funny. You know, the Bitcoin bulls have a saying that the best time to buy Bitcoin was 5 years ago, and the second best time to buy Bitcoin is today. Now, I don't, just to be clear, I don't necessarily subscribe to that, you know, perspective. But I do think there is a, you know, there's a contingent out there, and, you know, we deal with them on a daily basis that are, you know, sort of super bullish on Bitcoin. And they feel like that, you know, while they're super bullish on all of these cryptocurrencies, you know, just as an asset class, but there is a view that, you know, at a minimum, the sort of top three, right? So Bitcoin, right, XRP have sort of achieved this status where, you know, there's no individual government or entity that is going to be able to sort of shut them down. And so, you know, that gives people a lot of confidence in, you know, the value continuing to rise.
So what else is going on with these cryptocurrencies? I've heard that the IRS has gotten somewhat more active. Are they actually looking into this phenomenon of these virtual currencies? And
they are. They've been more active over the last couple of years, investigating whether people have been paying taxes on the cryptocurrencies. There was a debate several years ago about how the tax treatment of cryptocurrency, or how cryptocurrencies should be treated from a tax perspective. That debate is still going on. There's disputes, I think, about staking, whether that should be taxed. But what the IRS is doing is trying to figure out, like it does in any industry, any type of valuable asset, whether it's cash, gold, et cetera, is whether there are people who made a lot of money and failed to pay taxes on it. And so they have initiated what is referred to as John Doe summons and are seeking that type of information.
Well, let me follow up on that, Grant, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the different federal agencies are deeming it different things depending on what they regulate. The SEC could deem it a security. The IRS could deem it something where they get the most property tax or whatever tax they want out of it. Commodities, future trading could label it something else. Is there going to be a universal definition?
I don't think so. I think some of it depends on what you do with it. So you're right. Like Bitcoin is treated as a commodity. There are other cryptocurrencies that the SEC would say is not a commodity, but rather a security. That's what the whole SEC versus Ripple dispute is about. And there are plenty of other tokens or cryptocurrencies that the SEC believes are in fact securities. So I think it's going to, I think it's to be determined. I think it makes it hard on the industry when the industry looks at something and says, this type of digital asset is a cryptocurrency, and there are lots of them, and the different regulators look at them differently or have not fully clarified exactly how they view particular currencies.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden. Joining me tonight as co-host is Josh Borger. Tonight, we're discussing the complex legal arena surrounding cryptocurrency with, from the Palo Alto office of Perkins Coie LLP, Troy Foster, and courtesy of Goodwin LLP, Grant Fondo. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, that number, toll-free, 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic or any question relating to cryptocurrency. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation.
So have any cryptocurrencies gone, or any of the companies gone public in the U.S. at this point?
Well, the one company that's gone public in the U.S. is Coinbase, and they're not a more of a utility than a crypto company. In other words, there's no specific cryptocurrency or token associated with Coinbase. What it does is it allows for users to be able to access cryptocurrencies, purchase them, store them, and they can sort of use fiat, U.S. dollars or other currencies to purchase the various cryptocurrencies and then, kind of hold them on behalf of the purchasers.
Is it possible that another cryptocurrency company that actually makes cryptocurrency will go public?
I think it's possible, but I think that is sort of reasonably far off right now. I think what you're likely to see before then is just the sort of next step in the evolution would be the SEC approval of a Bitcoin exchange traded fund or ETF. There's probably a dozen or so applications that are pending right now. And I think it's, folks like Fidelity, WisdomTree, VanEck, and others serious institutions are looking at that. And I think, that will sort of open the door for, more mainstream adoption. And then I think, you can kind of look down the road and see, potentially companies going public after that. But I think that's going to be the next step in the regulatory evolution.
Josh had earlier brought up the Saturday Night Live episode with Elon Musk, but I think a greater phenomenon of late are a lot of social media celebrities are getting involved in cryptocurrency. And that begs the question, what's that all about and what risks do they face?
So Jeff, yeah, you're definitely seeing that. So these, whether it's TikTok celebrities, YouTube, et cetera, they have tremendous followings. And so there are companies that are interested in using them to promote tokens, and they're also interested in potentially raising their profile as well as raising money, profiting essentially from motivating or advising their various followers. But it is an area that is a little bit risky for people in that space, because you run risk of, if you're hired to promote a token or a digital currency, there's a risk that a regulator comes in and says you're supposed to be disclosing that, in fact, that you're promoting it. If the SEC comes in, for example, and says that that token is a security, that promoter has certain rules and regulations that apply. You saw Floyd Mayweather, the famous boxer, and DJ Khaled got in trouble a couple of years ago with the SEC. Likewise, if you're using your platform to pump or dump in essentially tokens, so that you buy a bunch or get a bunch, and then you really hype it so it goes up in value, and then you get rid of them, that also can create problems. McAfee, who's a former, you know, very famous software founder, has run into problems with that, where he was pumping, allegedly, tokens. And so there's definitely a lot of risks involved. Likewise, if you're providing advice on any of this, that's also a different regulatory regime that you need to be aware of, your special licenses and registrations that you have to do. So it's a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of interest in it. These are real celebrities in today's day and age. They're celebrities to my kids. They know who they are. These social media people, but there is risk involved, and there are limits to what you can do without getting yourself in trouble.
You know, you mentioned some of those limits, but what comes to mind, I think of the securities laws we all learned going through law school, that limit what you can say to control the market, to bring people into the market, or tell them to buy a stock or sell a stock or whatever. You start manipulating the stock market, you could get into real trouble if you have the right platform or a certain inside information or ownership shares. Are we starting to see the same type of thing coming up in this arena?
I think you will. Yeah. The SEC has made statements that they are concerned about it. CFTC has done it with market manipulation. So, and I have seen it just in my practice. I've seen examples of market manipulation. So there is a real risk. I think it's a concern to number of regulators, because you have people essentially potentially defrauding others. And so that is a real concern, and fraud always grabs the attention of regulators.
So Grant, you mentioned a few lawsuits. We've also seen lawsuits, I believe, a bunch in New York that were filed recently dealing with initial coin offerings, the equivalent of initial public offerings. What are the big lawsuits dealing with cryptocurrency that people should be aware of?
So starting with the ones you mentioned, those are a bunch of ICO-related litigation. They are really probably the last legs of those litigation, which the ICOs took place in 2016 and 2017. And the basic allegation is that people sold tokens, issued tokens as a company that were really securities. And so we'll see how those lawsuits play out. And the SEC has brought a number of actions against Telegram and Kick and others relating to that.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second, though, just for the benefit of our listeners. What is an ICO?
It's an initial coin offering. So in its sort of basic form, it, according to the SEC, essentially mimics an IPO. So an ICO is you have a bunch of coins that the company has minted, and then they sell them out into the general market. So the SEC generally views those as securities. What you're seeing, a couple of cases to watch, though, that I would alert listeners to if they're not aware of it already, is the SEC's lawsuit versus Ripple, which is a battle right now about whether XRP is a security. Troy mentioned it earlier. It is one of the most well-known and oldest cryptocurrencies. SEC takes the position that it's a security. They're also going after two of their executives, which is a little bit unusual, for aiding and abetting those sales. And then there's a lawsuit, an NFT lawsuit, which is a non-fungible token. There's a lawsuit against Dapper Labs the allegation is it's a civil lawsuit, meaning just a plaintiff has brought it. There's an allegation that the NFT is a security and therefore was improperly sold.
Yeah, the Ripple lawsuit is, it's really interesting. I mean, I think that it's the only one that I'm aware of, and Grant, you may know others, where, the SEC has gone after somebody for a token offering that occurred prior to the issuance of the Dow report. And it's a little bit other than, these sort of like obvious frauds, right? Like, there were some scam things that they chase people down for. But Ripple, you know, is kind of an actual business that has value. And I think that, you know, at least the way that we thought about things, you know, it was sort of, there was a pre-DAO and post-DAO, right? And you know, kind of before the DAO, before the SEC made any kind of, you know, sort of statements, was a little bit of you know, an open season. Whereas after the DAO report, you know, there was a feeling that they put people on notice about the way that they were going to, you know, pursue regulations. And so, you know, ICOs that occurred following the DAO report, you know, were viewed to be pretty high risk. But, you know, I think you were generally thought to be in reasonably good shape if your ICO had occurred prior to the DAO report. And this case has sort of upended that, you know, kind of practitioner understanding.
You know, I did just get a listener that sent in their question rather than calling and asks, how far away is blockchain from an inflection point where even an ignorant dunce, as the person describes himself, could understand it, how to invest in it, and how to do so safely and wisely?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I without necessarily agreeing with the caller's self-characterization, I guess what I would say is when the first ETF is approved, you will have the SEC, you know, sort of approve an institution to offer, you know, an exchange-traded fund, you know, that is focused on blockchain. And so you will have, like, you know, kind of top-tier level disclosure about it in that context that will be, you know, prepared in a way that you know, at least facially is designed to be plain English and you know, should hopefully bring people you know, into the loop in terms of really getting their arms around what the offering is.
Another caller called in with another related question. As a creative person interested in selling his digital creations as NFTs, but has no idea how to get started, what would you recommend for a beginner to learn and to gather some correct info about all this crypto stuff? His expression, not mine.
Well, what I would say is, one, generally NFTs are, you know, I think viewed in the industry and even by the regulators. I mean, Gensler, for example, who's now the commissioner of the SEC, said CryptoKitties, which really was the first form or certainly well-known form of an NFT, is not a security. And I think there's a general agreement in the industry and amongst regulators, I don't mean to speak for them, but that, nor can I, but that NFTs in of themselves are not regulated. It's when you start doing things with them, like selling fractional shares of them or putting them up on exchanges and, you know, pumping up the value of it, that it gets a little bit more risky. But so that's what I would say, is I think as long as you keep it to basic, just I'm just going to sell my NFT to some other individual, then I think it's a pretty low risk proposition from a regulatory perspective.
Yeah, and there's lots of, you know, you can sort of track, you know, some of the artists that are out there sort of selling NFTs and follow some of the media around it to get a sense of, you know, sort of how that works. I think the, you know, Beeple is a good, right, if you kind of Google what those guys are doing, you know, you'll get a lot of information about, you know, kind of the NFTs in the art context.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, this is Felix Contreras. This week on Alt Latino, we want to introduce you to a new form of music coming from the eastern side of Cuba that could possibly become your soundtrack for the summer. Want to find out more? Check out the next Alt Latino right here on your favorite NPR station. Don't miss it.
Alt Latino, tonight at 8:30, and that's preceded by All Songs Considered at 8 o'clock here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and online at KALW.org. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For other details, you can always call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden, and I'm joined by our co-host tonight, Josh Borger. Tonight, we're discussing the complex legal arena surrounding cryptocurrency with, courtesy of Goodwin LLP, Grant Fondo, and from the Palo Alto office of Perkins Coie LLP, Troy Foster. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, outside the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, anything relating to cryptocurrency. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation.
I see there's a lot of companies that are operating offshore, a lot of the crypto companies. Why is that, and where are the popular places for them to operate?
Yeah, so the main reasons that that we see in the practice that drive people offshore are tax and regulatory. You know, on the tax front, there's a difference between sort of selling a, a security versus, what could argue, could be argued is a product. So if you're, sort of selling a security, that's generally not a taxable event, but if you're selling a product, then, you typically would have to recognize taxable income on that sale. And so, a lot of the offshore, was being driven by, the notion of lowering your aggregate taxable income on a sale of, what was effectively a commodity or a product when the tokens were thought to be that as opposed to securities. And then, from the regulatory standpoint, I think, Grant mentioned that, the Ripple sort of executives were being charged, personally by the SEC. That's a little bit more challenging to do if you were living in, the Cayman Islands or some other kind of offshore jurisdiction.
So I'm going to take a different direction with the next question, but I've lost my computer. Well, more on point, somebody's helped themselves, and I don't have a backup and don't have any of the tokens, any of the passwords, anything. How could I recover these lost monies?
I think you got a problem, Jeff. if you happen to have if you're with Coinbase or some other established exchange, you may be able to it's not all is not lost necessarily. But if you are, like many people, keep their private key on their computer or somewhere in their house, then if once you lose it, it's gone. And there's really no way to recover it. And I don't get them as much anymore, but I got a lot of calls when Bitcoin started rising from people who had lost their pass keys, their private keys, or had a computer that was tossed or couldn't get into the computer because it was damaged, et cetera. And I think I can't remember what the number is, but there's a pretty decent percentage of Bitcoin, not an insequential amount, that is probably lost forever because people got it very early on, didn't think anything about it, and it's gone. I, for example, have some XRP that I got, 4 years ago, probably 6 years ago, and I no longer have the key to it, and so it's gone. Luckily, it wasn't a whole lot, so I don't feel too worried about it, but it's a significant problem.
Is there any way to get insurance or someone hacking into your computer for any losses that you might sustain in this?
I have not seen any insurance in that context. There is some insurance for companies that provide crypto services. There can be insurance, but not for individuals. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that either. I think that'd be tough to underwrite.
Is putting this information in a document that's stored on the cloud, so perhaps you could recover it from another document. Is that sufficient to perhaps protect you?
I would not. So generally, you want to be careful where you store it. There's usually some people will put it in their safe deposit box. I would put it in things like that rather than necessarily up on the cloud. I mean, it can be hard to connect your wallet with the address, but there is theft with it, and so I think you have to be careful.
You brought up wallet, the word wallet, and that brings up a related question I had. What is a hot wallet, and how does that differ from cold storage?
Yeah, sure. So a hot wallet is a storage, a facility that you have that is connected to the internet. So when people talk about hot, they're really mean is that it is connected, and you are able to transact directly from your wallet to other wallets using the internet. Cold storage, when people talk about that is a storage mechanism where you have something that is disconnected from the internet. So if you had some Bitcoin on Coinbase and you downloaded it to fobs or that you can then unplug from the internet. Once you've unplugged it, that represents cold storage. And when it is connected in, that would be that'd be a hot.
What is just going back to bringing it back to celebrities? Is it Dogecoin? And what is Elon Musk's role here? Why is he dabbling in this? He dabbles in quite a bit. Why does he keep dabbling in this? And I guess could his comments about a different currency then be somehow violations of something? I don't know.
So the crypto sector is really kind of interesting for this very kind of thing, right? So Dogecoin started as a joke, and was sort of there to make fun of crypto as a as an asset class, really. But then over time, people started to take it seriously, and it is certainly beyond me to divine Elon Musk's motivation. But, from what I know about him and what I've seen in the media, I think that he probably found it funny and was sort of attracted to it from just the sense of humor aspect of it. Over time, it just started to get more and more traction. I think it's a real thing now. It's sort of like all forms of money, right? That they have value because people think they have value. And so now, it's I think I was looking at it the other day, and the trading sort of volume and the overall market cap was really significant. So it is now, I think a legitimate cryptocurrency.
So can I go out after the show and buy a Tesla with Dogecoin?
No. So Tesla does not accept Dogecoin. They did accept Bitcoin for a while. That's also in part when Elon Musk made that announcement, that did increase the value of Bitcoin. And when he came out more recently and said, Tesla's no longer going to accept it because of the environmental issues, I think that did have a negative impact on the price of Bitcoin. So there's many of these currencies are still not yet adopted by retail America or, other retail operations in the world. There are some that accept Bitcoin, and some that accept Ether, but many of these, and Dogecoin is a much more popular one now because of all this stuff going on with Elon Musk. But many of the other ones are not widely accepted by merchants.
You brought up the issue of the environmental issues and climate implications of mining Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. I wanted to give each of you a chance to talk about that. But before you start, can you dumb it down a little and tell our listeners what you mean when you talk about mining Bitcoin.
Sure, I can take that one. So the in the Bitcoin white paper, there is essentially a very difficult sort of math problem, and the in order to solve this math problem, it takes a tremendous amount of computing power, and that process of solving that problem is how you mine Bitcoin. And the environmental sort of aspects of it, the issues that you see are mines sort of being set up that kind of put a tremendous amount of burden on the power grid in various places, and then it's not just the computational power that you need for the mining. It's also the, kind of air conditioning to keep the computers at a reasonable temperature and, sort of on and on and on. So I think that has been something that, a lot of the environmentalists have started to, kind of wake up to in the context of cryptocurrencies. I think it's still a little controversial because, at least in the case of Bitcoin, there's less and less mining that's happening and more of just sort of trading existing Bitcoin. So there's a little bit of a debate about what the real environmental impact is. I haven't sort of personally gone that deep on it, but it definitely is an active debate.
Yeah, and Jeff, what you're seeing now is there is a trend towards environmentally friendly cryptocurrencies, currencies that take less computation power and electricity than Bitcoin. There was a trend a long time ago actually to move away from the mining of a cryptocurrency because of the expense associated with it. So that's been happening anyways, but I think you're seeing a further acceleration or an awareness of the environmental impacts and how to rectify that, including focusing on non-fossil fuels to help power the industry.
Let me turn it over to Steve from San Francisco. Steve, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, how you doing?
Great, thank you. And you're on the air.
Okay, so I have two issues that I've thought about, and I hope your federal prosecutor is around. The Bitcoin recovering its value quickly shows that there's some kind of fundamental value in that currency that's not being talked about, that's not just speculative and in the industry. I think what's happening is that people that have a large amount of cash, like especially drug dealers, they're supporting the value of Bitcoin because that's a way to accomplish, various nefarious kinds of activities like assassination and buying weapons by exchanging Bitcoin, and then someone who wants their Bitcoin redeemed can then go to the person that has a lot of cash and they can make money on speculating on the Bitcoin. It allows the person that has a large amount of cash not to expose themselves to as much danger, so that there's a fundamental utility in the international criminal organizational networks in exchanging things like precursor chemicals for making methamphetamine, where you have large amounts of stuff that you got to exchange and people need to get paid. If you pay them Bitcoin that you can later exchange as cash, you don't have to carry cash to the dangerous transaction, and the dangerous transaction doesn't need weapons to occur because everybody gets paid electronically. So I think it's facilitating international activity. What's the other thing is that Bitcoin no longer can manufacture new Bitcoin. There's going to be some kind of crisis, because what really powers Bitcoin is people doing the transactions and making the ledger. If nobody has a server to manufacture the ledger, Bitcoin will freeze up like the stock market will froze up back in 2008. if nobody trusts anybody. Does that make sense?
I think what you're really asking, my guest, is a fundamental question, whether, well, actually two fundamental questions. The first is obviously, does this, the quantity of coin have to be constantly growing in order to support the value?
No.
But the greater question, I think, is the first one, which is, do you think that this value is being propped up by illicit activity and people shifting assets into it, whether to launder it or whether to, for their own security, to not have to maintain an army to protect themselves?
So let me address that one.
Is making a distinction about whether it's a token or an asset. The reason that people think that the U.S. government currency has value is not because it's an opinion and people agree. It's because it's backed by a government that has thermonuclear weapons. And the thermonuclear weapons have existential value. So they support the currency. If somebody has a large amount of cash, that supports the currency. If it's just people's opinion, it simply evaporates. So I'm saying it's an asset. It really is an asset if it's supported by a dependent person that has a lot of cash. It's no longer it's actually a currency.
Steve, I hate to cut you short, but I'm going to ask you to take your answer on the air because your connection's breaking up, so we're starting to have some issues there. No, thank you for joining us, and you're welcome to come back another time. It's just that the connection, the phone connection, was deteriorating pretty rapidly. So toward the end, it wasn't making sense.
Thank you so much for listening to me. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us. Grant, you seem to have a handle on that answer as he was finishing up right before the connection broke up.
Yeah, I would say a handle and an opinion. So, listen, there's no question that, like, the internet, like cash, like diamonds, like gold, like any other asset, that cryptocurrency has been used by criminals. But that doesn't mean that it's not being used by people like myself and others for very legitimate reasons. The reason Bitcoin, I believe, skyrocketed over the last 6 to 12 months in price was not because the criminals were exponentially using it more, but rather because financial institutions, Wall Street-type financial institutions, were better understanding the value, better understanding the risks associated with it, and were viewing it and valuing it as an asset class. And so when we talked about Elon Musk, when Elon Musk says Tesla is going to buy, I think it was like $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin to keep it on its balance sheet as one of the assets, that tells others in the industry who follow Elon Musk, wow, that's an interesting asset class. And they put it in there. Individuals invest it because we look around, we say, okay, is the stock market safe? Maybe, maybe not. Is real estate safe? Maybe, maybe not. So where do I diversify my assets? And any asset advisor will tell you, or investment advisor will tell you, you should diversify. Now, whether you should get into crypto is a different issue. It's pretty speculative. But I just think there's been an assessment of that this is an asset class, that it's an industry that is growing and is here and is going to continue, and people want to become a part of it. And one of the ways to become a part of it and hopefully, you know, profit from it in a sense is buying Bitcoin. So I there's no question it's criminal activity. You know, the one thing that the caller misses in a sense is Bitcoin is traceable. And so it is actually worse than cash in the sense if the police can figure out that Grant Fondo has a particular wallet address, they can literally trace my Bitcoin back to the beginning of time and see where I got it from and who I sent it to. Whereas if there's cash, you can't do that. And so it can be a very effective police tool to actually have someone use Bitcoin. Now, he is right that it is used by criminals, and generally they view it as a nice way to move money, those that use it, because it is cross-border. And if the wallet is not identifiable, it can be very, very hard to trace people. So like other assets, just like diamonds are hard to trace too. So it's I think there's a lot of reasons for its value increase, and I don't think it's just simply because criminals use it.
You know, one of the things I've seen evolve is very parallel to how our currency evolved. And for a long time, our currency was backed by gold. And you know that a dollar was 1/35th of an ounce of gold. And then as time went on, it first went on a floating market. And ultimately, a dollar began to symbolize not gold per se, but an interest in the economy of the U.S. and of all the things that we're producing. And a dollar was going to represent an interest in that to one extent or another. And it's more of an idea of that representation than a direct representation. And I think that this is taking it to the next level. It's the idea of the currency and the representation rather than a hard government-backed security. It's more independent and outside of government, but it seems to be the next step in that type of an evolution.
I think you're right, Jeff. And the reason, part of the reason Bitcoin took off was because when you have a government asset-backed asset, you are control. It is controlled by the government in essence. And so again, the U.S. is not a good example because we have a very stable currency. But it took off because of the Greek crisis in Greece, where suddenly people could not access their money from Greek banks. So the banks were taking control as well as the government. And the government was impacting negatively. Their actions were negatively impacting people's pensions, livelihoods, et cetera. And the concept came out that, well, listen, we shouldn't always rely on government and big financial institutions to control our assets or control our ability, this type of asset class. And that's one of the reasons Bitcoin has become very popular, because it does allow people to, especially in more developing countries, to not rely on a government to protect their assets.
So to follow up on that, are there countries right now where most of the trading, everyday purchasing, paying people in wages is done outside of that country's currency, but in some form of cryptocurrency, because the people view it as safer than their own currency?
You know, it's a good question. I'm not aware of any country where that is the case, but there are, you know, the conditions for something like that to occur. You know, you would need to have a country that, you know, had a pretty good electrical kind of infrastructure, right, to be able to support, you know, the cell phones, computers, that sort of thing, right, that you need, while at the same time, you know, a sort of a loss of faith in the, you know, kind of the central banking system, right, and in the currency. I mean, the you could see that occurring, right, I mean, in any number of places, but I'm not aware of that's a reality anywhere right now.
Is it a possibility that a country could say, we're just not going to have our own currency anymore? Some countries say, we're not going to have a military anymore. We're not going to have a currency. We're going to rely on cryptocurrency. That's our new currency. Is that possible?
I think it's possible. I think it's unlikely, just because countries, it's a source of pride. You look at most dollar bills, they have, you know, heroes or presidents or things like that on their currency. So I think that is probably not likely to happen. I do think you may see countries adopt a digital currency. So you have the U.S. dollar as well as the digital U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. You're also seeing people, go back to your last question, Josh. I agree with Troy. There's no country yet where the majority or significant number of people are using Bitcoin instead of their currency. But you are seeing more and more people doing it. You are seeing more immigrants send money home through cryptocurrencies versus U.S. dollars, or to then have to exchange them into you know, Mexican currency or other currencies. So you are starting to see that change, but it'll be a long time before I think it eclipses sovereign currencies.
Ken from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. I've been following blockchain for a while, and while I am not 100% clear on it, I do understand a lot. What scares me most, or the reason that I shy away from it, you know, to use it to save money or spend or send money, is exchanges have been taken down and completely wiped out of assets, Bitcoin exchanges. And so, you know, with my bank that's basically paying me no interest, at least I have FDIC insurance, but I have no insurance with blockchain. So how can you protect against, you know, these very now active cyber criminal groups of, you know, 300 people possible in the Eastern Europe, you know, taking down the next exchange? What's my protection?
Well, you can get a certain amount of protection from cold storage. But as we talked about, you know, the flip side of that is that if you, you know, sort of lose the device or you lose the access keys, then, you know, you're sort of out of luck on that one. I think, you know, the other bit of protection that you get working with a company like, you know, kind of Coinbase is that they're publicly traded. You know, I think you can read their S1 where they talk about, you know, the steps that they take to, you know, kind of safeguard people's assets and the insurance that they have. And it's not FDIC insurance for certain, but it is, you know, it is sort of better than you might get treated, you know, like if you were dependent on Mt. Gox or something like that. So I do think that, you know, as the industry evolves, there will be more protection that comes into it as these companies sort of mature.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's still riskier than putting money in the bank. Now, putting money in the bank doesn't get you anything. You actually lose money right now as you're putting it because of the inflation. But I think you should, if you're going to do it, one, never sort of, it's the rule, never invest some more in something than you can lose for whatever reason. There are people who, Enron, right? People invested in Enron and ended up being for some a financial disaster. So, and likewise, maybe don't keep all your currency at one exchange. Keep them at two or three or four so that if one gets hacked, you don't lose everything. But it is still, it's a risk. You're absolutely correct. There is still risk that something goes wrong, that it gets hacked, stolen, et cetera. There was an example of an exchange in Canada where the founder died and he had all the private pass keys, had many of the private keys to the company's wallets. So you want to make sure that there's the companies that you're investing in are at the top of the line, basically.
And even at that, wouldn't you want to make this the very top of your investment pyramid, just the riskiest part of it?
So everybody has different risk tolerances.
I deal with startup companies, so this is definitely not the riskiest part of my portfolio.
Ken, thank you for joining us. I hope we answered your questions, but we are out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Tonight, we've revisited our discussion of cryptocurrency. Our guests tonight, courtesy of Goodwin LLP, Grant Fondo, and from the Palo Alto office of Perkins Coie LLP, Troy Foster. Our show tonight has been produced by Josh Borger and yours truly. Our thanks to all of you for joining us, for Josh and all of our guests, and at the controls, Damian D. Minor. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night and stay safe.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. 415-989-1616. You can also visit sfbar.org, and those two connects, you can get more information on lawyer referral service. This is KALW San Francisco.
Carol Off, co-host of As It Happens, bringing you the stories behind the stories of the day, Mondays through Thursdays at 11 p.m., heard only in the Bay Area on KALW San Francisco.
Q from the CBC is next at 7 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Flora Sigismundi.
This is Swap Doll.
Hey, this is Caleb Folliwell, and you're listening.